running, right. Yud Dalad Adar, Purim, Tuesday the 10th of March, Rabbi Aaron Hirsch. Are Jews paranoid?
Oh, yes.
Hello.
Yeah. Sympathetic.
Neurotic as well.
Talking about being paranoid. The story of the person who walks into the library and says to the librarian, "Where are the books on paranoia?" And she looks up at him and she says, "They're right behind you." So, if we deal with the Megillah and look at the concept of what appears to be paranoia, we find Mordechai instructing Esther not to talk, not to give any details over, both prior to becoming the queen and even afterwards, even though there's a slight difference in the Seder, whether it's Amor and Meladato, whether it's Meladato and Amor, whether it's in the present tense, Magedes, Lohigido in the past tense, those are perhaps for a different time. But either way, we find this care and concern. And obviously, in the main incidents in the Megillah, when Haman has the power to have everyone bow down to him, and yet Mordechai refuses to do so, within this, apparently, he won't reveal his motives. He won't give any reason as to why he's acting the way he is. But this is it. Lo yichrav, lo yishtachaved, not just now, but even in the future. So, perhaps to have a look at those psukim and expand things from there. Let's deal with a fairly obvious question. And that is, why did Mordechai not bow down? If we're going to say that it was actual Avodah Zarah, then the question is, was there not another Jew in all of Shushan, potentially in all of the empire, who was makpid on this Avera? He was the only one. And if it was Avodah Zarah, why is there no allusion to it in the Megillah itself? Something that Gemara, Tosfos, but within the text, if this is the main reason, and it's a very valid reason, why isn't it there? Moreover, when Mordechai is confronted by the Avdei HaMelech, he refuses to give a reason. They ask him, "Why don't you bow down?" He doesn't say anything. So they go and tell tales to Haman. Vayagidu l'Haman liris hayamdu divrei Mordechai. Which, you know, stam, they're a koch leflach, and we have to know this, it has to be in the Megillah, in Tanakh, that they went and told Haman, you should know that he's not listening to you. And since it's clear that he didn't give them a reason, where do they get this bit that kihigid lahem ashehu Yehudi? Where does that bit tie in? Okay, so in other words, what lay at the heart of Mordechai's decision, and how come that the Avodim are playing such a prominent role in stirring things up? Okay. Let's understand for a moment why, in fact, is anyone bowing down to Ahasuerus? So, to Haman. So I've already drunk too much. So normally you would assume it's because Ahasuerus commanded everybody to bow down to Haman. But that's not actually what it says in the Megillah. It says, Ki chein tzivo loi hamelech. Because the king, Ahasuerus, had commanded him, presumably Haman, that everyone should bow down to him. That's the wrong person to tell. He should be telling everyone but Haman. It's, you know, the joke they say about Rebbe Shiva, he dies and there are two brothers who are fighting over who should take over, and one of them comes one morning and he says, for sure it's me that should take over, because last night I had a dream, and our father appeared to me in the dream and told me that I'm supposed to take over. So the other one said, if our father would have appeared to me in a dream and told me that you should take over, that makes sense. But the fact that he's telling you this doesn't really make much sense. So what's Kichen Tziva Loi HaMelech? So there is a medrash that tells us as follows. Bonea shel Rochel, nisyonom shove, and geduloson shove. Their trial, their nisyon, was comparable, was the same, and their greatness ended up being the same. Which means that what Mordechai is dealing with is clearly not as we would see it, obviously, in the text. Interestingly, this is something that Rabbi David Foreman points out, there is a tremendous parallel in one posuk between here in Perek Gimel in the Megillah and Parshas Vayeshev. Here it says, Vayehi ka'omrom elov yoim yoim veloy shama alehem. And there it says, Vayehi kedabra el Yosef yoim yoim veloy shama eleho. So there is very much, the Torah is setting things up that we can see how the one is very similar to the other. What was the aside of Yosef's nisoyim? He said, how can I betray my master and do what Eshes Potiphar wants? He has invested me with trust. How can I betray that trust? If we're now going to say that the Nisoyen of Mordechai is the same, because we understand that Gedulosam Shova, they both become the Mishnah Lamelech. But if we're going to say Nisoyenam Shova is that they were confronted with the same issue, that means that Mordechai is confronted with the question of whether to betray the king or not. But isn't it the king that told people to bow down to Haman in the first place? Well, maybe not quite. Because Haman, as is quite clear from the Megillah, is a megalomaniac. We see this on a number of occasions. Firstly, from obviously the time where he comes into Ahasuerus' presence and Ahasuerus says to him, you know, what should we do to somebody that we want to give covered? And he comes up with such extreme examples of what should be done, which he himself has to modify. In other words, the first time he talks about the horse and the levush and the keser. And Rashi points out that in the next pasuk he has to drop the keser because he sees that Mamash has gone too far. Ahasuerus understands that he wants to be the king, which was actually the case. You also see it in the conversation that he has with Zeresh and all the Ehavov when he says, I've got everything. He's tremendously wealthy and everyone's bowing down to him. But there's one Yiddler, there's one Jew who isn't doing it. And what's his response? V'chol zeh einenu sheve li. It's garnished. Everything I have is worthless. Because unless I have everything, I have nothing. And therefore, what is yitochen is that Haman has a conversation with Ahasuerus. And he says to him, you know, your majesty, I now have your tabas. I'm representing you. And it would be correct that people would bow down to me as a way of honouring you, in the same way as the Rambam describes the origins of Avodah Zarah. So, Kichin Tziva Loi HaMelech, Ahasuerus is fine, okay, no problem. Kichin Tziva Loi HaMelech, Ahasuerus is not going to make a big deal out of it, but yeah, fine, say it if that's what you want. Mordechai understands that his true loyalty has to be not to bow down, because Haman is using this occasion to take Malchus for himself. And we know the Gemara in Chulin that asks, Haman min ha-Torah min ha-Yin, ha-min ha-Eitz. What was going on at that time in Gan Eden? The question was, as the Nochash put it, v'hiyisem kelekim. That's what the Nisayan could expand into. And therefore, Mordechai has a difficult choice to make. He can do what everybody else is doing and hide behind that as his excuse. Everyone's bowing down. Or he can be loyal to Ahasuerus. Did Haman have a tselem around his neck? It's Yitochen. But that's because he's turning himself into a getshka. That's what he wants from it. And therefore, what Mordechai has to do is remain loyal. And the truth is, the concept over here, Oymein es Hadasa, the emuna that Mordechai exhibits, is there all the way through. But in actual fact, this is not just a battle between Haman and Mordechai on the level of Ahasuerus, but on a much higher level. The Gemara in Megillah Yud Gimel tells us, Omer Esh Lakish, Golui V'yodua Lifnei Misha Omar V'hoya Ha'olam, that Haman was going to give his Aseres Alofim Kikar Kesef, all the Shkolim, to Ahasuerus in order to buy the rights to wipe them out, to commit genocide. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Hikdim shiklehem l'shkolov. He preceded the shkolim of the chatzi shekel of Klal Yisrael to the shkolim of Haman, and hence be'echod ba'adar mashmiim el shkolim. That's when we make the announcement that people should give the half a shekel. And that way, we counterbalance that which Haman gave, because we gave before he gave. It's all very nice, except for one thing. It's the question I once heard from Ramesh Shapira Zatzal. He says, that would be fine and well if Haman would have given the money. But he didn't. He offered the money, but Ahasuerus' response was, HaKesef nosun loch, keep the money. For Ha'om, you can do whatever you like with them. So, yeah, he made the offer. But he didn't give any money. So why do we have to give money in order to counterbalance the money that he never gave? But Yisoscha asks another question. He says, Haloi, it, at the time of the Purim story, Klal Yisrael were in Golus. So they weren't giving a half a shekel. In fact, they hadn't given a half a shekel for almost 70 years by then. In which case, you're talking about something that a few doors ago they used to do. So you're digging back into Zechus Ovis. If you're going back into Zechus Ovis, surely there are more powerful Zechuyos that Klal Yisrael have that could have overcome Amalek. Why Dafka this one? So he explained as follows. Why are we here in this world? In order to use Koach HaBechira, Meshech Chochma, on the Pasuk, B'Tselem Elokim Bara Oisai, Zohar Nekeva Bara Oisam, says that Tselem Elokim, being created in the image of God, means to have Koach HaBechira. The choices that we make create us to be who we are. Now, on a daily basis, the level of Bechira that we have to exhibit is relatively minor. The type of choices that confront us are quite small. Nevertheless, the more I flex that muscle called Bechira, the more I build myself up to become somebody who, when confronted with a much bigger Nisayon, I now have the opportunity to do something no one's going to know, no one's going to see. Now, all of the investment that I have put into building up my Koach HaBechira now comes to the fore. And therefore, we are defined by the choices that we make. Not by necessarily the actions, but by the choices. Because Bechira only works insofar as I am committed to a particular plan of action. I intend getting up for Shacharis. I wake up the next day, there's a tree blocking the entrance to my street. So now what? So now I might not be able to get there. My Bechira expresses itself in what I decide to do. But Hakon v'dei shemayim chutz miyira shemayim means that whether it will actually happen or not in terms of olam ha'asiyah, that's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I have to make up that my mind to do that. And that means what we are confronting with Haman. El Chalami never gave the money. But he was fully committed to it. He'd already written out the check. Ahasuerus didn't take it. But that's where his identity was. He was a veloy yirei Elokim through and through. And he was committed to destroying Klal Yisrael. We, in order to overcome that, have to be committed to the half a shekel. What is the commitment? So, Medrash tells us that there are three things over which Moshe was troubled, didn't understand, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him in a Maresh al Eish. So the menorah we understand. Moshe couldn't understand how to create the menorah, miksha achas, nothing welded to it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a vision. The Chatzi Shekel was one of the things that he couldn't understand, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him at Matbeo Shel Eish. What did he understand now that he didn't understand previously? What it looked like? What insight was he given by being shown the Matbeo Shel Eish? Sadr Moshe as follows. Money is actually useless. It's useless. We spend our lives running after it, but it's useless. You can't eat it. You can't make a chair out of it. You can't do anything with it. We give it value. But in and of itself, it has no inherent value. Hariah, go back to hyperinflation Germany in 1923, and you see people, pictures of people with wheelbarrows of notes. $1 was 23 million Reichsmarks. Why? Because they were just printing pieces of paper with numbers on it. It had no value whatsoever. In and of itself, it's not valuable. We give it money. We give it value, rather. And therefore, every nation wants to have their own matbea. From an economic perspective, it's Yitachon, it would make much more sense for Canada and the USA to share one currency. They share common land, common resources. There are so many things that they have in common that it would make sense for them to have one unit. But no one's going to give up their independence. That's what gives them an element of their malchus. Memela, the matbea shel eish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows Moshe is our currency. It's not something that exists purely within the physical world. It's something that we take from the physical world and turn it into matbea shel eish. We create out of the physical something which transcends the physical. And that is the fight that we have with Haman. He's using money to destroy, to become a ritzeach. We are using this half shekel to be menadav to the Beis HaMikdash, to become closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's why, Shabbos morning, we describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Ein Aroich Lecha. Now, we understand if you describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as omnipotent, omnipresent, HaKol Yochel, Memela. Ein Aroich Lecha? You can't buy Hashem? What does it mean? It means that within this physical world, if you just keep it to a physical level, there is no way to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The erech comes when you take something physical and create out of it, transform it into a matbea shel eish. And in that way, we understand therefore, that the fight between Haman and Mordechai was taking place not simply over the covert of Achashverosh, but over the emunah that Mordechai was exhibiting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There is, therefore, also within these psukim, something that links Haman to his own ancestry. We are told, Vayivez be'enov lishleach yad b'mordechai levadai. It was too billig for him to start on Mordechai. Where else do we find the word Vayivez? Says the Medrash, Bozoi ben Bozoi. Because if we go back to the Mechira of the Bechira, it says, Vayokum Vayelech, Vayokum Vayesh, Vayokum Vayelech, Vayivez Esavaz Bechira. Now, the interesting thing is that, as we are aware, Esav committed 5 Averis on that day. Torah is silent about this. Murder and all the other things that he did. Vayivez Esav is a Bechira, that we are told. And of all the ones that we're told, surely Vayivez is the most obvious. He's just sold the Bechira. Obviously he despises it, he spurns it. He sold it for a bowl of soup. Elamai. So this is something I saw from David Hofstetter in Drash David. He says, no. Actually, Esav does not despise the Bechira. He really wanted it. Horaya, that when the time came for the Brochus, he shed 2 tears over the loss of the Bechira, each one of which caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It was genuine remorse. But he was overcome by Taiva, and therefore, there and then he traded it. What does a Rosha do when he's done something wrong? Rather than feel the guilt that comes afterwards, you now have to make up an excuse as to why, be'etzem, it wasn't something wrong. And therefore the Torah only puts Vayivez long after. He convinced himself, after Vayochel, Vayesh, Vayokom, Vayelech, after that, still Vayivez, because he had to hold on to that spurning of the Bechira, because otherwise he starts feeling guilty. Haman hated Klal Yisrael. Novos, he needs an excuse for it. And therefore, now Mordechai is not bowing down to me, so now I can ally that to my hatred, and now I've got an excuse, because all these Jews are like that, and now we can wipe them all out. And this is also a well-known story about Chaim Brisker, when somebody who'd gone off the derech came to him. He said, I've got lots of kashas and emunah. And Reb Chaim said to him, when did the kashas occur to you? After you left or before? If it's afterwards, then they're not kashas, they're teretzim. And for teretzim, I can't possibly provide a teretz. So therefore, the half a shekel, even to the doer that isn't being menadav, the half a shekel, is the fact that we have a value system. A value system that is traced all the way back to Kimu Masha Kiblu Kvar, the value system that we undertook with Nasa V'Nishma, and that we re-undertake on Purim, Alts Kimu V'Kiblu. And therefore, we need to call out a Moloch when it occurs, and understand that a Moloch is going to be a constant companion of V'Achrisei Adei Oved. That a Moloch is going to be there until the very end. And the Kabbalah that we have to undertake on Purim is that we will remain loyal to a value system which might put us in the minority, which might cause us, just as it did to Mordechai, to do something where everybody is saying to him, Madua, why are you doing this? And nevertheless, we have to remain strong to that which we know is emes. One little chasima to this comes from an incident that takes place after Haman receives his first mapola. He has to take chauffeur Mordechai around the whole of Shushan and call out, and he becomes the gubber, the shamus, the town crier. any bizarre that you can think of happens to him at that time. And what does he do? He brings back his advisors and Zeresh Ishtai, and he tells them what happened to him. And how does, how do they react? Vayomer lo chachomo v'Zeresh Ishtai. Im mizera ha-Yehudim Mordechai. If Mordechai is Jewish, asher chileis limpol lefanov, lo yisuchal lo kinofel tipol lefanov. You're going to fall. What do you mean, im mizera ha-Yehudim? Im? Previously, when I came up with the idea, I made it quite clear, it's Mordechai ha-Yehudi. What's the im mizera ha-Yehudim? I heard this question at the very end of the Gulf War. We're living in Eretz Israel, and at the time you had to have your radio on all the time. So on Tanis Esther, on the radio, this is where I heard the question. And he gave an answer from the Noydib Yehuda. Noydib Yehuda says as follows, basing himself on Rashi. Rashi says, this is a nation that either they're all the way up or all the way down. And therefore, if you've had your first Mapola, this is the end, right? You've started falling, it's finished. But there's one thing you can do. Im mizera ha-Yehudim. If he's a true Jew, if he has the value system that Yidden really have, then there's one way out potentially. Nofel tipoil lefanov. Beg him. Bow down because they are Rachmonim, Baishonim, and Goim Lechasodim. Im mizera Yehudim. If he is truly a descendant of the Yehudim, as should be, then that is potentially the Eitzah. Okay. So, we understand that it wasn't paranoia that was leading Mordechai in the direction that he advised others and that he himself undertook. Mm-hmm. Although, as Henry Kissinger once famously said, this is about the only time of the day of the year that we can mention him, because he was not much of a Jew. But for whatever level he was on Purim, we can mention him, and he had one line about paranoia. And he said, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean that they're not really out to get you. So this was not the case with Mordechai. Mordechai was remaining true to the value system that made him truly a Zera Yehudim. I will leave you, though, with one question. The Tzara of Purim came about, the Gemara gives us two reasons. Either because they bowed down to the Tselem of Nebuchadnezzar, or because Nenem Isidosish Lachashverosh, they were moel by using the Klei Mikdosh, or they were turning their backs on Eretz Yisrael. Either way, it was a Ben Odom Lamokoim issue. And how did they undo it? They did tshuva, they fasted, Kimu V'Kiblu. The way they undid the Tzara is also Ben Odom Lamokoim. Why is it that all the mitzvahs of Purim are ben odom l'chaveru? The whole emphasis is ben odom l'mokay. Why, therefore, even the Mikra Megillah, Brayim Hadras Melech, is an idea of ben odom l'chaveru? Why is it that that's where we put the dovish when both the avera and the solution to the avera were ben odom l'mokay? I wish you all Freilich and Purim. Yeah.